I'm sure there's still going to be a lot of local opposition to many of these applications coming forwards.
Hopefully in time we'll see more applications being approved and delivery will come forward quicker. So my prediction would be...
Welcome to the podcast that brings you the most important conversations in property and surveying. We talk about new technologies, we talk about the latest trends, and we talk about the role of our industry in achieving net zero. I'm Luke Brayfield, partner at Fisher German. Today, Fisher German talks the new planning policy framework. We'll look at why the NPPF is needed, what's changed and what hasn't. The big question really is, why now? So today we'll talk about what's shifted, like housing targets, greenbelt policies and the presumption in favour of sustainable development. But not everything's changed. Neighbourhood planning, for example, is still a key part of the system. And as these changes roll out, what does it all mean for landowners and developers? Should they be rethinking greenbelt opportunities or adjusting their strategies around housing targets? Nice. There's a lot to unpack, so let's get right into it. I won't be going it alone. We've got Angela Brooks, partner here at Fisher German, joining us. Angela is a chartered planner, heading up our strategic planning team, specialising in strategic land promotion, advising clients on planning and development opportunities. Angela, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Luke. I'm really excited and looking forward to delivering my first podcast.
Also, delighted to be joined by Tom Mascari. Tom is an executive director at Bentley Project Management and a chartered quantity surveyor. Tom, welcome.
Thanks, Luke, and hi. Hi, Angela. Really pleased to be on the podcast today. My focus within the company is around strategic land development. The focus today is obviously the residential side of that, working with agents like yourself, landowners and master developers on big strategic sites. That will be typically around looking at phasing, deliverability of primary infrastructure and viability, cash flow advice. We also then deliver infrastructure on behalf of our bigger master developer clients. So that's delivering infrastructure on the ground. And then on smaller sites where the land is subject to option between a house builder and a landowner, we typically work with the likes of yourselves, checking through deductible infrastructure costs put forward by house builders, challenging and negotiating on behalf of our landowner clients where necessary. So again, thanks for having us and really looking forward to it.
So Angela, you're going to give us the planning perspective today, and Tom, you're going to do delivery. Together, I think we'll have it all covered. So Angela, to kick it off, why was the NPPF required?
Firstly, we're in a housing crisis right now, and there's inertia in the planning system. Previous government's constant tinkering with the planning system was causing uncertainty for the development sector, including the December 23 changes to the NPPF, which were very disruptive to the sector and detrimental to housing supply. For instance, the last monitoring year, just 220,000 homes were delivered, with an annual delivery not exceeding 250,000 homes this millennium. We need another way of calculating housing needs. The Conservatives applied a 35% urban uplift that was quite arbitrary, it was ineffective, and it didn't result in delivery. The new government, having pledged to deliver 1.5 million homes over the course of its five-year parliament, they have a target to deliver 300,000 homes per annum. They understand that in order to deliver on this target, they have set an uplifted target of 370,000 homes. And they're seeking to achieve this through the reintroduction of mandatory housing targets. The government have reversed changes made in the December 23 NPPF in respect of advisory housing targets. They are now mandatory. There's a new standard method for calculating housing needs. This uses existing housing stock as a base for growth and then applying affordability ratios onto this. There's the removal of the urban uplift, meaning that those 20 formerly identified cities and urban areas have had their needs reduced. And most locations' needs have increased, in some places significantly so. So basically, the new standard method should deliver the 300,000, with targets being identified as 370,000.
Wow, Angela, there's a lot there. We always talk about planning being complex. I'm really glad someone like you is on our team that knows all about it. What's the key takeaway for you?
I think the key takeaway is that the government are, with these changes, seeking to boost delivery. Delivery had stalled under the previous government, so we're definitely seeing a move in the right direction. And there is a lot to look at, and every site will be different. And the arguments looking to bring that site forward will be different. So I would just urge people looking to bring their sites forward just to come to us to look at a specific site strategy for them.
Tom, any comments from you on that?
One of the things I hear most from developers as being a barrier to delivery has been the planning system and the way it's been. So obviously the changes are hugely welcomed, I think, by everyone. There's a perception, rightly or wrongly, that the local planning authorities are short of numbers of planning officers, and that's part of the problem in delayed planning decisions. And I know Angela Rayner has promised £100 million and 300 new officers. And I just wonder where the officers are coming from and how quickly that will take to sort of come to fruition, and whether there might be more onus on external planning consultants to help out in the short term. Or yeah, I suppose it's great having the tools now to make planning decisions quicker and boost delivery, but is there the resource there to carry that through?
Yeah, I think it's a really difficult one for the government, for the whole sector. There's not enough planning officers, there's not enough inspectors undertaking appeals and local plan examinations too. So we're already seeing some local plan examinations being slightly delayed, waiting for responses from inspectors where they're just too much work for them.
I think the other part of that as well, just that we sort of hear and see as well, is the consultees. And it's all right boosting the planning officer numbers, but actually we see from the local highways authorities, national highways in particular, the other consultees, do they have the capacity to work under the new ways in terms of boosting delivery and the new speed that Labour are sort of proposing with the reform, do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, a lot of the consultees, particularly highways, often landscape, there's often no in-house landscape officers, so local authorities are going externally for those. And I question whether there will be resource in advancing all of these additional planning applications that will be being submitted.
My observation is that when planning applications are submitted, they're often taking longer than 13 weeks to be decided upon. And that's due to the need for the local authorities to wait to hear back from those statutory consultees. And it leaves many applicants in a difficult position as to wanting to move things forwards, but not being able to, having to wait for those consultee responses before they can proceed with the project.
Yeah, I read something that was saying that in one district in 2023, I think it was, 40% of the major planning applications took over a year to determine, which is, yeah, I mean, obviously way over and above where we should be, isn't it? So
yeah, and it's all down to resource. And Luke, as you say, it's about not just the planning officers themselves, but the consultees and them getting their responses back to planning officers. It's really tricky for officers, I understand that, but it's not helping our sector in getting planning permissions issued.
So on timescales, when do these changes take effect?
In terms of development management purposes, that's immediately. Local authorities with plans adopted over 5 years ago with the newly increased housing numbers may find themselves immediately in a scenario where they're unable to demonstrate a five-year housing land supply, and they're immediately plunged into the presumption in favour of sustainable development, and speculative developments are likely to be advanced. In terms of plan making, the revised MPF will be applicable 3 months from its publication, so that was the 12th of March 2025. And for plans at the Regulation 19 stage, if they've reached the Regulation 19 stage by this date, they'll be allowed to proceed under the previous MPPF if their housing requirement is within 80% of the new requirements. Otherwise, local authorities will be required to go away and update their plan to reflect the revised needs. And then for plans already submitted for examination by this date, they'll be allowed to proceed again under the previous MPPF, but where the housing requirements again are less than 80% of the new requirements. The authority will be expected to begin a new plan in the new plan making system as soon as it's brought into force later this year.
So, Tom, are house builders and developers set up to accelerate delivery?
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see, Luke, because we obviously saw pressures on materials and labour supply post-COVID. We saw hikes in steel and timber prices particularly, and lead times on cladding material shoot through the roof. Material supply is actually in a good place at the moment, generally reported by suppliers that there's decent availability. And actually the pressure at the moment is labour increases, cost increases. There was BCIS report 6% labour construction increase over the last year. And obviously the impact of Brexit on obtaining overseas workers to help out. So we'll have to see as the period goes on, but be interesting.
So in addition to that, we're seeing quite a few impacts from sustainability, environmental measures, and including Future Homes Standards. What are you seeing out there?
Yeah, so obviously we had the 2021 building regs that were enforced from June 23, which put an increase on house build costs affecting viability, unless it's reflected in the revenue, of course. I think it's pretty clear that although we don't yet know the extent of the next stage of the Future Homes Standard and its implementation date, but actually it's clear that it's probably going to include a mandatory requirement for air source heat pumps in new builds. And I'm hearing anywhere between sort of £4,000-£6,000 per plot for the implementation of this. And the other part of that is the potential impact on the grid and the power demand and the availability, and again, potentially affecting viability.
Tom, you touched upon viability there in relation to Greenbelt release.
Yeah, so obviously looking first and foremost at utilising previously developed land or brownfield sites comes with its own complexity and viability challenges. We work with lots of clients that develop brownfield sites. The remediation costs and dealing with contaminated materials, things like that, obviously bring viability challenges. With regards to the golden rules, again, the increased sort of affordable housing provision, which I know is subject to the usual viability tests, again, that has an impact. As I see it, there could potentially be lots of challenges from a viability perspective as developers and planners submit applications for less than the affordable housing provisions required under the golden rules. And that may prolong things a little bit. I think the changes or the notes around infrastructure delivery and enhancing existing or providing more green space, to me, don't seem hugely different to where we are already. So I think the main points around that are going to be viability around affordable housing provision and the utilisation of brownfield land.
It's really interesting, the downward consequence of change, isn't it? So you've mentioned there viability and affordable housing. Angela, I'd be really interested to hear your thoughts on this, but viability is likely to elongate the time to obtain a planning permission. So that will likely have a consequence on the delivery of new homes to meet that target. And then around affordable housing, due to changes in funding and outlook from registered providers, that market is stalled at the moment. So we're aware of a number of house builders that are unable to dispose of their affordable units under the Section 106 agreement. So again, having another impact on delivery too.
Yeah, certainly in terms of the viability and the delays in the planning system, that we've already seeing planning applications being delayed because we've put forward viability arguments on the affordable housing provision. So yes, there's definitely delays going to be taking place, but it's not just those delays. Again, it's taking up more resource and capacity from the local authority. So it seems to just be creating another problem in trying to solve one.
Interesting. So we've talked about a lot of what's changed. Is there anything that hasn't changed?
Yes, neighbourhood planning largely remains the same. Paragraph 14 is still there, and that provides protection from speculative developments in locations where a neighbourhood plan, which is less than 5 years old, providing it has an identified housing requirement and has allocations and policies to meet its needs in full, that is still there, and that really doesn't change anything. I think the development sector had hoped that that would be amended, and lots of representations did go in seeking to reduce that 5-year protection down to 2 years. It remains the same, so it's still a barrier to development in some areas.
With all that in mind, Tom, what do you advise landowners and developers do moving forwards?
Definitely speak to their advisors, such as Angela, whether there's any potential for sites that are currently in the green belt to shift to being a grey belt. Consider viability, cash flow, phasing, delivery as early as possible as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd ask landowners to come forward to us to also look at where housing targets have increased significantly. There's clearly going to be opportunities in those areas, or where local authorities may have a 5-year housing land supply shortfall. So absolutely, we're already advising clients on this and we've seen a lot of opportunities.
So it's fair to say a lot's changed, and sites which might not have had potential last year could have potential now.
Absolutely. With the housing numbers changed, and if it's Greenbelt, the opportunities may well be there now. It's not going to be for every site, but a lot of sites are definitely going to be able to be brought forward now.
Be interesting to see as well whether sites that are on the edge of Greenbelt, where you might have ownership that splits between allocated land and then Greenbelt, whether actually bringing some of that site into the grey belt and developing the whole, a much larger site, makes it more viable, and therefore a council or local planning authority has far better opportunity to deliver on their housing targets by introducing more grey belt.
Okay, well, time to make some predictions. So 12 to 18 months time from now, what does the planning world and the delivery world look like?
Well, I think, as we know, as we've discussed, there's going to be a significant upturn in the number of planning applications that are submitted. I'm sure there's still going to be a lot of local opposition to many of these applications coming forward. So there's probably going to be a lot of refusals, unfortunately. So there's going to be a lot more planning by appeal too. Hopefully, a lot of those appeals will be approved because the government want to drive housing delivery. So if those directives are passed down from the planning inspectorate to local authorities, eventually that gets through to them and decisions will be made locally.
I think from a delivery perspective, it'll be interesting to see what happens with interest rates throughout the year. Obviously, we're in quite a turbulent time as a country economically. So if the housing demand from occupiers increases, hopefully in time, we'll see more applications being approved and delivery will come forward quicker. So my prediction would be a slowish growth through 2025 while everyone gets used to it, and then hopefully push on from there.
Yeah, I agree. And local plans are progressing slowly, admittedly, and with all the additional planning applications that we've mentioned, they need resource, they need officers. So it's very difficult to see how delivery is going to be coming forward very quickly in the next year, I would suggest. We're probably looking at a couple of years before we see those numbers increase significantly. As to whether the government will reach their 1.5 million homes is to be seen, but they're certainly not going to deliver 300,000 in their first year.
Thanks, Angela, Tom. That's some really interesting predictions there. We should get back around the table in 12 months' time, 18 months' time, to see whether you were right or wrong. Tom, I've heard about your white paper, the Bentley white paper. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so at the end of last year, we released a white paper touching on a lot of the topics that we've talked about today. That's readily available. I'll put a link on my LinkedIn page and would urge any prospective landowners or clients, developers interested, please get in touch and see where we can help.
Yeah, good. Thanks. I've had a look at it myself and there's some really good experience shown in there, the projects you guys have been involved with. So I'd definitely recommend listeners to have a look at that and look at your experience and how you might be able to assist them on their projects. We can sum up the changes, I think, with resourcing, sustainability and viability, which remain significant challenges. But there is also lots of new opportunity, whether it's reconsidering Greenbelt opportunities, adapting to housing target changes, or navigating the evolving rules around sustainable development. So clearly quite a technical topic and something which people need to take sound advice on.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd encourage clients to get in touch with us in the planning team. Yeah, every site is different. It's got different requirements.
Thanks, Angela and Tom. We talk in our own individual ways about how complex planning and delivery of development is. So it's really interesting to hear your insight. It's complex. We try to simplify it, but there's always downward consequences, which I'm sure we will keep tackling moving forwards. And your expertise is very much appreciated. Thanks, Angela.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Luke. Really enjoyed it.